I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. On this episode of The Storyline, we hear from Colton Harris, executive director of Writer's Block, Inc., a nonprofit performing arts program designed to encourage youth to use writing and performance to address personal and societal challenges. He spoke with The Day's Rick Koster via Zoom about the ongoing protests against police violence. Colton talked about the role of art during periods of social upheaval, and he shared a song he co-wrote in the weeks since the death of George Floyd. The song is titled "Another One Dead."
How you been?
Yeah, been doing pretty well. I mean, you know, this time in history it was the perfect storm for all of this uproar and uprising, but it brings a lot of emotions with it. So I've been well in the deep parts of my soul, but been troubled in my heart and feeling for the community and for the world right now. So, but I'm doing as well as possible.
Art is almost by definition born of inspiration. My wife would tell you there's a couple of CDs in my collection that she doesn't think have any inspiration in them at all. But I want to read you something, Colton, that you said to me last summer about Writer's Block. You said, "Our team here facilitates the creative process. We're always looking to address pressing issues in society, and so our young folks come in with the intention of making a statement about what's happening and what things are sensitive to them personally and in our community." I think that's an incredibly visionary and prescient idea. Do you think the necessity for that sort of philosophy is because of the times we're in?
I think that it's a necessity just inherently as a part of our human experience. I think that we're highly dependent on art and creativity as human beings for expression, for navigation, and also reflection. You know, I think that every time we think about how do we capture moments in history, how do we capture emotions and feelings, all of that is centered in art and creativity. So I think that that philosophy carries weight in times like these, but in my opinion, it's often neglected when things are seemingly okay, which we know that in all honesty, they're never actually okay. It's just these times expose, you know, the inequities and inequality and the hatred that runs deep. And it's just exacerbated in these times. But I think that that philosophy needs to be implemented and thought about at all times.
Yeah, I was thinking last year we were talking about, not even a year ago, about y'all's very poignant and powerful production about immigration, the immigration experience in the U.S. And the human brain and our hearts don't even have time to assimilate it. You can't compartmentalize enough to worry about every different thing that's happening and collapsing around us right now. Have you been in touch with some of your kids? I hate to use that phrase, but I'm an old guy. But and how, and, you know, because we're all separated, how are they dealing with what's happening right now? Not just the epidemic, which is horrible enough, but in light of George Floyd, for example.
Yeah. So I've been in touch with them as much as possible. I mean, there's obviously some barriers. Not everyone has the same access to internet and computers and all of those things to make this virtual transition easy. But I've been in touch with them enough to know that from a pandemic standpoint, it's been a rough transition for a lot of them, but it's been a bit tense because they have felt oppressed and suppressed in their school systems. And so they're like happy to be free of them, but also to be socially disconnected has made it worse. So that's almost like, I'd rather be in school and deal with that so I can be around my friends and people. But then in light of everything that's happened, I mean, our world looks completely different now than it did even just a week ago. So they are finding it outrageous and they're emboldened and want to say something and want to step up and want to be the generation that actually makes the change, but also feeling the very real barriers that youth brings in this country and around the world, really. You know, ageism, it goes both ways, we know, but they have a voice and they want to be saying things and they want to be passionate and to make actual tangible change. But some of that feels suppressed by the fact that everything that they do is sometimes undermined because of their age. And even for myself, I can say that too. There's certain spaces and platforms that my voice isn't necessarily legitimized by my superiors because I'm not quote unquote old enough. And so we look at government, politics, even the police force, it's just a bunch of adults, you know, that are like lacking training in basic human rights and decency. So I say all that to say that they're ready to say something and are saying things, whether it be to the protests and then our upcoming summer program, which we've evolved it into being a hybrid, mainly going to be virtual and doing a lot of things through Zoom and then putting out digital content, which we're super excited about. But they're primed and ready to make some statements.
Has your programming or concept changed in the last 3 weeks, whether by your own inspiration or by maybe the demand of the kids you work with?
No, it's definitely, I mean, initially our plan was to split the young people into small cohorts to meet virtually, in which they're going to talk about the different social issues they want to, inspired by, like, specifically, like, how has COVID-19 exposed a lot of injustices and inequities from an economic standpoint, as well as, like, racially, because we know that Black people are dying at higher rates than anyone, really, of COVID. But then now that all of this has happened, I think some of the art that's going to be made is going to be more poignant and more direct. But our curriculum was never the new way I kind of was thinking about our program design. It was not really dependent upon us coming in with a bunch of information. We were really just creating online space for young people to create with about what they wanted to. So the design is still going to stay the same, but I think that the art's going to be more direct, and it's not going to be because we're forcing that. I think it's just young people really want to say something.
Going back to the production last year about immigration, do you feel as though the exercise, the process, the actual performance was in fact therapeutic to the people doing it? And do you think those of you who were involved could see a quantifiable influence in your community? The people that saw it, the parents, the...
Yeah, I think, I mean, first, it was 100% therapeutic and educational. And I think that that's when we do our best learning, is when we do it through art, creativity, and therapeutic means. And so it was 100% therapeutic to all of us involved. And as far as like the quantifiable return on the investment, if you will, I think that that is a little bit harder to measure. I think we had some people come up to us and say like, wow, I was really impacted by the show and my thoughts have changed about this, or I want to get involved, or I want to do this, I want to do that. But that's also sometimes the downside with just doing like live performances sometimes, is that people have an initial grab and reaction and then they're able to walk away from it. Whereas like if you have a film or a documentary or a music, something that you can continue to pump in people's faces, then you might have some people who have some longer term results. But I think that we ended up doing the summer show again in December and the turnout was pretty good and we were able to have some more conversation. It seemed like it inspired people a lot. But yeah, I think it's one of those things where live performance and live theater is sometimes hard to navigate.
One of the questions that has been on my mind, and we did something on this with some bands a couple of weeks ago with COVID, people that were writing music and possibly planning albums, and I've talked to some writers as well, some novelists, and they were like, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, you're going to see this tsunami of work that was inspired by what we're going through with the sickness. A week ago, George Floyd was murdered. Already, I don't have to wait 6 months. I'm not trying to be light or flip to hear what you're going to do with it, because you already cranked out this incredible tune. Talk me through that process. Was it at what point did you turn off the TV or whatever and say, I got to do this now?
Yeah, for sure. So I mean, I'm a musician and artist and been playing and writing music for years and have been working on a project like for a while now. And during COVID, super grateful that I've been able to invest in equipment to be able to record and do everything in my basement. And my creative collaborator who lives with me were able to like create at all times and whenever. And then the song was actually mixed and mastered and added to by a good friend of mine who has a studio. And we were just able to send tracks and stuff back and forth. So I've been working on music a lot, but honestly, we dropped this song on Friday. On Tuesday night, we were just downstairs in the basement and we just started playing and just started jamming out. And I picked up the microphone and just started humming some stuff and then posted it on Instagram. And people were like, wow, like I hear your pain, like da, da, da. And I was like, wow, well, maybe we should like turn this into something. And then woke up on that Wednesday morning and told him, I was like, yo, let's write this song right now. And then that evening, Wednesday evening, late, just went in the basement, wrote it very quickly. It was just naturally flowed. Nothing took longer than a few minutes. All the words were just seemingly flowing with the melodies, and then spent all day Thursday just tracking over and over to make sure it was tight and good. And then the guy who's featured on there, Ryan Parker, he's from Manchester, so he was sending vocals to us and trying to shuffle through the whole social distancing collaboration, and then kept sending stuff over to my boy Zach, and he was doing edits and mixing, mastering, sending it back to us. And then finally we were good to go on Friday afternoon, and then was able to drop it. So it was like very quick turnaround. Lord, please save
my people. If the murdered black masses could rise from black ashes and fly, I bet they'd land exactly right where we are. You know, we've always wanted to master the skies, the deep pain that's inside, knowing that any day's the last for us all. Trying to live and keep my breath inside my black body, knowing at any moment colonists could come and rob me. All of it potent, enough to make you lose your focus, to make us disappear. Black magic, hocus pocus. Behold the boldness, broad daylight, hand in pocket, and proudly posted, knee to the back of his neck. Begging to breathe, I guess, we being black as a threat. Begging to breathe, I guess, we
being. It was just natural inspiration. And like, even since then, planning on releasing another song. I just wrote one yesterday that I think is going to continue to keep up this momentum. And I just want to keep pumping out art, because that's the way that I want to support and show, give people an anthem to march to heal to, and also to call more people's attention to what's happening. Because I think that art's a great way to do that. And I kind of position myself kind of like a James Baldwin, in the sense that like, I'm not always going to be front and center at the protests and in the riots and in the spaces like that, because I genuinely do feel a lot of anxiety and fear about that. I've had plenty of unpleasant interactions with the police in my life already, and so a big part of that for me is making sure that I stay safe, but also contribute in the way that I can.
Another one dead, these lynchings keep provoking me. My baby black kings and queens keep the hope in me. We fully know this ain't the way that it's supposed to be. We fully know this ain't the way that it's supposed to be.
Another one dead, another one dead. And I can't seem to let this thing go. Can't breathe like those people.
You know, what you just said is really powerful. It's difficult for me to assimilate as a 65-year-old white guy. But what do you think when I say, when the Sandy Hook massacre happened, my wife and I turned to each other and said, this is it. This is the one that is going to completely change the whole gun conversation. It can't get any worse than this. And we completely believed that was going to be, you know what I'm saying, a sea change. We were wrong, obviously, sad to say. But there's now, again, we have that feeling, George Floyd, this is it. How do you, as a young man, feel? Do you feel with your friends and family that something really is happening here? Or is it just going to be the same old?
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, as I kind of started off by saying it, it's the perfect storm, mainly because, you know, when Freddie Gray happened, Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, everyone was outraged as well. But the reality was that we were involved in our day-to-day lives and we still had to go to work and still go to school. Whereas now we're in the middle of a pandemic and everyone is either still unemployed or already revved up because of the injustices economically and the health disparities, which are being really pointed out through this pandemic. And so I think it's created more mass attention and movement, which feels like hopeful in many ways. But I don't think that this is it, or this is going to lead us into a new era. There's still a lot of darkness and it still feels very chaotic. And when I think about even our president, I think that a lot of his statements and his voice, unfortunately, a lot of people agree or feel that way. And I'm exposed to them. I have friends, people I went to school with on Facebook who agree with a lot of the statements, who were first thing they said to me, was like, not wow, George Floyd was murdered. They were trying to think like, well, let's wait and see what the details are. Like there was some sort of like something could come out that could rationalize us seeing a video clearly, the whole thing of there's no justification, right? But there are a lot of people that think that way, and I have like I said, and these are not just older people. This is people I went to college with who are like, hey, I know everyone wants to get anxious, but like, let's wait till the information comes out first. And it's like, like, what are you doing? So that's the other scary part for me, is that there, a lot of these things are generational, and from an ideological level, people are regurgitating a lot of things and that their friends and ancestors, you know, agreed with. So I'm not, and that's why, like, I do focus on the social aspect, but even in the song, I said that, you know, the roots of the very system, it's about it at an institutional level. There's other things that we can do and that we can even learn from in other countries that they're making use of to, like, to lead and to serve our country more from a humane perspective. But we know that we're driven by money, by greed, and these ideologies just help feed those things. And so it's, people don't understand, it's really harmful when you're using certain language like thugs. And thankfully we're in an internet generation, and it's such a point, social media, that we're seeing that there's a lot of corruption, but the people who are instigating a lot of the violence aren't Black people. But yeah, I had some friends over the weekend who were in Waterbury at a protest and were unrightfully detained. One girl was harassed by a cop on his horse. And, you know, some of my cousins are out there and getting mistaken for someone else. And even when their ID clearly says that they're not the person that the cops are looking for, they're still going to hold them. And it's just a scary time. So I'm saying all this to say that I know that something is happening, but I think everyone feels more fear than anything right now.
Any other thoughts you want to share?
I guess I'd just like to say that I believe that we need, and I know I'm going to do my part, but we need artists to really step up during this time to create, to capture these thoughts and this movement, and to make sure that we capture the heart and the feeling, because art has always been a part of political shaking up and revolution in a lot of ways. And even when we look at it now, I got the chance to, you know, a couple of years ago, spend some time in Berlin, looking at, you know, Berlin Wall and looking at all of these, you know, places where art, even street art, is helping push and promote the freedom and humanity that we're looking to. And so I'm just hoping that locally that we have artists step up and use their artistic voices to make a statement, because I like seeing people post stuff on social media, but we need music, we need visuals that kind of help get these things into people's hearts and souls, to also bring healing and to bring joy as well. And because we can't do this alone, but unfortunately I don't think everyone's on the same page in terms of what they think should be happening, or even the humanity of Black people. Lynchers keep provoking me. My baby Black kings and queens keep the hope in me. We fully know this ain't the way that it's supposed to be. We fully know this ain't the way that it's supposed to be.
You can find more information about Writer's Block Inc. at writersblockinc.org. That is writersblockinc.org. And you can listen to the complete version of Another One Dead at theday.com/Colton Harris. That's KOLTONHARRIS. Thank you for listening.